Welcome to r/malicious compliance, where a scummy manager gets himself fired. Before I start today's video, I just want to do a quick shout out to my second channel where I do on-camera content, so check it out by clicking the link in the description. Our next Reddit post is from Functional Psychopath. This all started December of last year and it just finished last week. So I bought a car from one of those buy here, pay here places. I love this car. It's a 2014 Mazda 5, and it's basically the smallest minivan I've ever seen. Well, on Christmas, we drove to see some family for dinner and celebration. But when we went to leave, the car would not start. We checked everything, and we found out the horn wasn't even connected. That any fuse that wasn't absolutely needed was simply missing, and the tires weren't the original tires either. Beyond that, we hooked the car up to a computer and it read several errors, but the one getting in the way was the immobilizer. I never even knew the van had an immobilizer. Okay, I gotta take a quick detour here. I know nothing about cars. I don't know what a fan belt is, I don't know what a transmission is, I don't know what any of that stuff is. But why would a car have an immobilizer? Isn't that the exact opposite of what a car should be doing? Isn't that like installing a heater inside of your refrigerator? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. But anyways, I called AAA to get a tow truck, but because we were in the middle of nowhere, AAA couldn't get a tow truck to us under our free membership. So we had to call a tow truck and then submit the bill to AAA after the fact. So my family let us borrow their car and the van was towed to a shop. A few days later, the shop calls and tells us what's wrong. I live in Texas, a single party consent state, and I record all my calls thanks to the app on my phone. The only issue they found stopping the car from running was the immobilizer was active, and they can't touch it without talking to the dealer. I three-way call the dealership and the shop. We talk for about 7 minutes. During this call, the dealership acknowledged that everything was working fine, and the car should be working unless it was malfunctioning. The dealership also gave permission for the shop to bypass the immobilizer, and we would be reimbursed for the towing and repairs. All the shop had to do to get the van running was bypass the immobilizer, and a couple of days later, we picked up the car and paid the bill. Both bills came out to just under $300, and we started calling the dealership. The first few conversations go well, and the phone rep seemed interested in helping, but mostly, I ended up getting tossed around from department to department and then disconnected. That went on for some time, so of course, I took to Reddit to find out my other options. As always, Reddit users know some crazy facts about how to get stuff done. So, I followed their advice and kept calling, eventually getting to a supervisor, and he said that he would take care of this when he ended the call. 2 more days go by, and nothing. So, I call back, and I get tossed around until I get to another manager who says, "We are not responsible for mechanical issues," and then hangs up. I call back, now quite annoyed, and eventually get back to the same manager. I explain that I have all the information and call recordings, including the repair shop three-way call. He cuts me off and says, "What, are you gonna take us to court over $296? I don't think so, but go ahead and sue. We will win, and if that small amount is worth suing to you, you probably don't have the resources to actually sue." This, of course, made me quite upset. So off I go to a justice of the peace and explain what happened. They give us a small claims form and explain the process. We can fill it out and pay for a constable to serve the dealership, or fill out the paper and take it to the dealership unfiled and explain everything to a manager in person. We chose the cheaper route because the manager on the phone was right. We didn't have the money to have it served, only filed. So we transcribed the phone calls. We gathered the bills and all the paperwork and made our way to the dealership's payment center. I wait in line, and I see that the name of the manager is the same as the manager on the phone who told me to sue them. I wait in line, and when it's my turn, I ask to talk to John, and he comes over and sits across from me. After making introductions, I confirm that it's the same guy, and I start to explain the situation again. As I'm explaining, I can tell the moment when he recalls talking to me on the phone. He starts to dismiss me, and I explain that he asked me to sue, so I'm here with all my evidence and the unfiled suit. I'm giving him one final chance. He starts to look over the papers and he asks me if I still had the recordings. I said, yeah, I can email him a copy. We sit and talk for about an hour as he reads through the paperwork. Then I said in a slightly aggravated tone, if something isn't done today, then I'm going to head right back over to the courthouse and file this document, as well as tack on a bunch more for emotional distress and whatever else the clerk hinted at. The clerk was very open-mouthed with various ideas. And I'll also send a copy of everything I have to every single email I can find on the corporate website. At this point in our conversation, I drew the attention of a woman in a power suit who rushes over for a recap. I found out that she's John's boss's boss, and she's none too happy about how things have gone. She assured me that all would be made right and gave me her cell phone number and email. I gave her a copy of the papers and left. Next Monday at 8 a.m., I got a call asking if credit being applied to my account would be acceptable. I say yeah, and the lady on the phone explains they'll credit $500 to the account as payments. I agree and we talk for a few minutes, and when I ask why it took this much to get things done, she laughed and said, "It shouldn't have, and certain people are no longer employed at the company." Well, today was Wednesday, and when I went to make the payment, it was already cleared, so thank you, Power Suit Lady. Okay, so I'm a gamer. And I'm not really like a corporate world type of person. So whenever someone describes someone wearing a power suit, I imagine like a space marine or Master Chief from Halo. So as you're telling the story, I'm imagining some like 8 foot tall space marine with like a power suit and a las blaster rifle stomping through the dealership trying to solve these corporate problems, which is a silly mental image, but it's what popped into my head. Our next Reddit post is from Shophopper. I just came back from a great skiing trip with a bunch of colleagues. The company I work for is a Dutch engineering firm with over 1,000 employees. This field of work is dominated by men. Our former CEO was with us on the trip. Let's call her Kathy Johnson. On the day of our return trip, Kathy shared a great story. While she was the CEO, she received many letters addressed to Mr. Johnson or Mr. C. Johnson. These letters were all based on the false assumption that the CEO of an engineering firm must be a man. She instructed her secretary to return every single letter unopened that addressed her as a man. Her secretary, also a woman, loved doing that. She returned dozens of letters over the years, stating that there was no Mr. Johnson at our company. When I asked Kathy about the replies, she told me that the senders invariably sent either a second letter with profuse apologies or were never heard from again. I feel like this is the corporate equivalent of opening your mailbox and seeing a letter that says, "To Dabney Bailey or current resident." Don't you just love it when they say "or current resident" because then you automatically know that it's spam without even having to open it up. Our next Reddit post is from Balls to Aesir. Back when I was a teenager, I had a job at a hotel as a busboy in a coffee shop. We had about 95 seats, and on a Saturday or a Sunday, we would have about 400 customers. It was busy, but I was good at my job. After noon, things would slow down, so I would jump into the dish pit to help them catch up. One Sunday, the back-of-house manager and general manager were having lunch and they called me over. They asked me to take the next Saturday's evening shift in the dish pit. I reminded them that weekends were pretty busy, and they would have a problem if I wasn't busing on breakfast. They told me they would get someone to cover busing, but they really needed me in the dish pit that Saturday night. I agreed, but I told them I would need to leave at 11 p.m. on the dot because I relied on public transportation to get home. And there was no way that I could work late. They said, "No problem," and we had a deal. On Saturday, I showed up at 3 p.m. to absolute chaos. Guess who they had to cover busing? That's right, the dishwasher. The pit was absolutely stacked with dishes, and then I found out why they needed me on that shift. We used the same glassware, plates, and cutlery for both the coffee shop and banquets, and there was a massive banquet going on upstairs. When I got there, the cook line and the banquet crew were going nuts, prepping and setting up tons of centerpieces, place settings, that sort of thing. It was pandemonium. The back-of-house manager kept yelling at me, "I need forks right now!" And meanwhile, I was fishing through the dozens of bus pans from day shift trying to get him the stuff that he needed. It took a while, but I managed to do it for him. I took his yelling with a grain of salt, since he was actually a pretty good guy, just stressed to the max. Finally, the banquet stuff all went upstairs, and I could start clearing out the backlog. It took me until about 8 p.m. Then, nothing. There were about 400 people attending this banquet, and occasionally I would see a member of the banquet team coming down, and I would ask them where the dish carts were. These guys treated me like garbage and snapped that they would bring them down when they had a chance. Sure enough, it was about 10 p.m. when the parade of banquet bozos started wheeling cart after cart of dirty dishes into the pit. There were dozens of these carts, 30 or 40 at least, and none of the bus tubs were sorted. It was all just tossed in. The plates hadn't even been scraped into the trash. There was leftover food on lots of the plates. Just before 11 p.m., I see the back of house manager talking to his crew, and I went up to him. I was really pissed off. "What the hell am I supposed to do here?" I said, gesturing at the carts. "Wash the damn things," he snapped back. "There's no time. I leave in 15 minutes, remember?" "Well, you'll just have to stay late." "I can't. I have a bus to catch. If I miss it, I'll miss my connection, and that's the last bus, so no, I'm leaving. I told you that last week." He starts getting irate, and I just took off my apron and left without a word. The next weekend, I arrive for my busboy shift, and I get called into the general manager's office. The back of house manager was there, and the general manager was asking me why I abandoned the dish pit in such chaos. As it turned out, nobody on the banquet crew could work the pit, and in the morning, there was nowhere near enough dishware and cutlery for the coffee shop. The dishwasher they had covering took one look at the hell in the back and quit on the spot. They had to close the coffee shop and lost a ton of money. I just looked at them and reminded them that when I said that I would take over that shit for the dish pit, that I would be leaving on time. It's not my fault that the banquet crew didn't start bringing down the dish carts until after 10 p.m. The general manager looked at the back of house manager and asked him what time they served the meals. 6 p.m. "So, you're telling me that your crew took over 3 hours to roll the dishes back downstairs, and you didn't do anything about it? What the hell were they doing? Why didn't you assign one or two people to push the carts?" Then I pointed out that all the carts weren't sorted and that the plates weren't even scraped. The back of house manager gave me the stink eye, and the general manager excused me and said to head back down to the coffee shop to pick up the busing. The following weekend I came in, and there was a big notice targeted at the banquet guys. All bus pans were to contain only one item. One pan for dinner plates, one pan for side plates, one pan for glassware, another for cutlery, etc. All dishes were to be in the dish pit no later than 15 minutes after being pulled from the table. All plates were to be scraped of excess food waste before going into the pan. The banquet crew was pissed off that they actually had to do their jobs, and the back of house manager was pissed that a lowly busboy slash dishwasher put him in the hot seat. They never asked me to take the evening shift again. I'm not really sure what I like more about this story. It's either that the general manager could have gotten away with his screw-up if only he didn't have his head so far up his own butt that he had to schedule this meeting with his own boss to get you in trouble, which backfired. Or that these people had a 400-person banquet and they only scheduled one dishwasher. It's like, what did they expect? And like, as a business owner, you know, sometimes you just screw up, you make mistakes, and it costs you money, which sucks, but like, what are you going to do? Mistakes happen. So when I look at the situation, what I don't understand is why would the manager just not offer OP extra money to stay late to ensure that all the dishes get washed and then just like give him extra money for an Uber to get home? Because yeah, it costs them extra money to pay for the dishwasher those extra hours and to pay him the bonus to like get home through an Uber. But still, that's going to be less money than you lose by not having enough dishes to serve those 400 some odd customers the next day. It's just so weird to me. Why lose extra money when you could only lose less money? You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense. Our next Reddit post is from Bobbert Gnarly. "So I worked in a fairly large store that wasn't very busy until 3 p.m. and only had 2 to 3 employees on the floor in the morning. We were getting complaints from customers that they would have to wait a minute or two at the register before getting checked out. We were always filling stock in the aisles, and we were never allowed to just stay at the register. Management decided that the longest any customer should have to wait was 15 seconds before starting checkout. As I always do when given tasks that contradict each other, I ask, hey, so what gets priority? Getting our stock out or ensuring that checkout happens within 15 seconds? They confirmed that checking customers out was a top priority. Perfect. I had my cart full of stock and I was in charge of the register. I put my cart about 7 seconds of walking time away from where I could view the register. So I literally walked for 7 seconds, checked, walked back for 7 seconds, which left me with a single second to do stock. Normally, you can put up a cart full of stock in about 30 minutes. My cart was still quite full after about 4 hours. Management came by and saw me walking back and forth, barely doing any work. I reminded her that what I was doing was top priority, and since I wasn't allowed to stay at the register, that I was accomplishing both my tasks in the most efficient way possible. The next day, the 15-second rule had been abolished. That was r/malicious compliance, and if you like this content, then check out my second channel by clicking the link in the description, or check out my podcast where I publish the exact same episodes.